European Football Weekly for June the 18th, 2013. I'm Dan Riccio. Alongside me are my co-hosts, as always, Derek Brandeo and Gord Brunt. On the show today, we will discuss the Confederations Cup going on in Brazil, the under-21 Euros in Israel as they get set for the final, Joe Kinnear, and we'll also have Neil Thurman of RotoWorld.com to discuss their venture into footy news, as well as many other things going on in the Barclays Premier League offseason thus far. Follow the show on Twitter at EFWSN590. That's where you can interact with us, as well as find some of the great stuff going on at Sportsnet.ca, including some highlights, videos from Soccer Central, and all the latest news regarding all of the biggest leagues in Europe. So, gentlemen, I don't know why I popped my pee so loudly there, but c'est la vie. I've just got a new, you know, affirmation with the French language dating back to my grade 9 days.
That's one of those sayings that I've heard. I have no idea what it means. Is it like a, oh well, is that what it means?
No, I think it's like that's life or something like that. Or, oh, you know, this is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's better than oh well.
That's life. Yeah.
That's if my grade 9 teacher taught me correctly. Sorry, Madame Aloy.
C'est la vie, you know.
Madame Aloy.
Que sera, sera.
Yeah.
Très bien.
You know, when Gord was a little girl, he asked his mummy what he should be.
So yeah, I'm going to rely on you guys a lot this week. I hope you watch some of the games because I was in Montreal enjoying a metal wedding,
and
I like to call
no
it.
And there's no TVs in Montreal?
Yeah. No, I was at a wedding, man. What do you want me to do?
Dude, like, I was at a wedding during the 92 World Series, Game 6. Do you think that stopped, you know, me and the rest of my family from ignoring my cousin's wedding?
Yeah, but it's kind of hard. Like, the first game of the Confederations Cup, we can't really ditch a wedding for that, can you? I mean, is that warranted?
Isn't there, like, mobile technology now?
In
like,
the semifinals.
You know, yeah,
Rogers,
it's
any place
nice.
TV?
I mean, this is, like, this is wedding etiquette right here. Although, I will say this. The wedding that I was at, pretty much every single guy was like a metalhead. I don't know if that's the correct term for it. Maybe
headbanger.
It's not. Yeah, headbanger. You know, they like their metal music, black shorts, black t-shirts, Cannibal Corpse, that kind of stuff. You know,
so
blood graphics
a lot
on
of
the
like,
shirts.
Jean jackets at this wedding?
No, it was just a lot of black.
First concert I ever went to was a Judas Priest concert. I had no idea what to expect, and it was probably a lot of people dressed like these guys. I think most of the people there were there to see the opening act, which Slayer. You ever heard of them?
Yeah.
That's pretty
no
hardcore.
So yeah, the people that I was with weren't exactly
I still have trouble mastering that last Slayer song in Guitar Hero 3 too, by the way.
That was so difficult.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Okay, so down to the business.
How was the pizza slushy, by the way? That has nothing to do with Dan being Italian. But he tweeted out a couple pictures. Pizza and spaghetti slushies.
If you go to @DanRiccio590, I went to the Couche-Tard, which is, I guess, their version of Max. They call it a Couche-Tard.
Custard?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they had pizza / spaghetti slushies. Like, how disgusting is that? I was offended by this.
It sounds almost as bad as the pizza burger from...
Who would eat the pizza burger? Like...
I would eat that.
Although that commercial is hilarious.
Absolute atrocities when it comes to just butchering the Italian cuisine.
Slushies have to be sweet. They can't be savory.
What does it taste like? Tomato juice with extra sugar?
I have to admit, zesty is not a flavor I want in my slushie.
Ugh. And cheese and pepperoni.
Do you think it would be like an actual pizza where the grease would like come on the top of the slushy?
It's a warm slushy.
I couldn't even bring myself to try it as badly as I wanted to, like just to see
you
what
know,
it would
Dan
actually
is lying
taste
right
like.
Now. He actually did try it.
Yeah, and it was no, I didn't try it. But pizza and spaghetti slushies. Maybe the worst combination. They called it Pizza Getty. So, no, it's not.
Because, you know, just one of those flavors by itself wouldn't have been appetizing enough.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely not appetizing enough.
Did they use pizza sauce and spaghetti sauce in the same?
Yeah.
Or did they
so
just,
there's a lot
like,
of tomato
or did they just
in
call,
there.
Or did they just make one sauce and just use it as universal?
I didn't
pizza?
Try it, so I don't exactly know. But I was just offended by it. It was disappointing. I mean, it was one thing for Pizza Hut to come out with poutine pizza, but to have pizza slash spaghetti.
So the stuffed crust wasn't the, that didn't go over the line for you?
No.
It was the
stuffed
poutine.
Crust was okay, as long as it's filled with cheese. I like cheese.
So how do you feel about the Nutella covered pizza?
I actually like those. As a dessert, they're fine. And Nutella's Italian. Who cares?
But is that really a pizza though? I'm just
no,
saying.
It's more of a dessert.
It's just like a massive
It's like making Nutella in the morning
sandwich.
For breakfast.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, just put it on a piece of bread. Except it's dough, which is the same thing as bread. So yeah.
What is this dough you speak of?
That was my adventurous weekend in Montreal. It was great. Brazil kicked off the Confederations Cup. 3-0 win over Japan, in which Neymar scored an absolutely incredible goal to open the tournament, pretty much saying, yeah, I'm going to try and carry this team through the next couple of years.
Golazo.
What a goal it was. Just a screamer.
It just seemed like one of those goals that just took the pressure off Brazil because I've read
and
reports.
It came early in the match, so.
Yeah, they needed it early because I've read reports about some of the players, how they hate the way that the fans treat them. They ride them. They start booing them early. The first 10 minutes they haven't scored, and getting a goal early in that match was just crucial for them. And
yeah. And the chest down from Fred is something so simple, but exactly why Fred is in this team, right? Because Neymar needs that guy to hold up the play a little bit and just give him that one little pass and take the pressure off of him a little bit. And that's exactly what Fred does.
It looked like he was maybe going to like take that ball and go for it himself until he saw Neymar. They must have connected eyes and knew what was going on right after that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a real set play or anything. It looked like just something that came because the ball kind of really came off of his chest quite a bit. But exactly what Gord said, yeah, it just completely took the pressure off, I think, or just gave them that little bit of, you know, we can do this.
Yeah.
The belief in this in themselves that they need, because they have been really ridden hard. They've dropped in the FIFA rankings, partially due to results and fact that they haven't been playing a lot of meaningful games.
Exactly, yeah.
But the pressure on them at home is absolutely huge because this isn't the Jogo Bonito Brazil that we're so used to, you know, seeing from past decades.
Yeah, and despite their fantastic performance in Game 1 of the Confederations Cup, it's been slightly overshadowed by protests over a hike in transportation prices and really much so much more than that in terms of politics in Brazil. They're not really happy with the amount of money being spent on new stadiums, and I'm sure you've seen the pictures or the videos on Twitter right now. Absolutely insane what is going on in Brazil, Sao Paulo, the streets, like, it looked like 100,000 people were there.
It's all over the major cities in Brazil. And the 20-cent hike in transit fees, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. It's the treatment that some of the locals in Rio and in Brasilia and all these other major cities that they face from the authorities. They've basically been stomped out of where they live and 200 plus thousand in four different cities. Like, it's pretty major right now. I've even seen the word revolution on Twitter, and that would be crazy to see.
The money that's being spent isn't being, you know, used to help the favelas and a lot of the poor people in Brazil, and it's just being used to, you know, spruce up new stadiums and,
yeah, exactly, and education and things like this that need
need
the money in most countries.
Why isn't there money for these public services that, you know, we all need instead for these stadiums?
Yeah,
for,
well, now they're hiking prices on transportation to fund these stadiums, and it's just it's a lot. And for a country that loves their football more than maybe anybody else in the world, in Brazil, it's still too much for them. Like, is the World Cup even enough? It's not enough for them to be happy about this.
I can almost compare it to, like, you know, when here in Canada, when we have the, you know, should we, back in the 90s at least, when the dollar was at 60 cents, is, you know, should the government, you know, help fund the Canadian hockey team so we don't lose any more of them? It's a lot of that kind of that same feeling. Even though, you know, hockey is so dear to us, we don't think that our tax dollars should go to supporting something like that.
But you always get these demonstrations when a city's hosting a major event or a country. You had it in Vancouver where they tried to clean up the streets and you know, try to move some of the homeless around. You've had it in London for the Olympics last year. They they had these special lanes on the roads, and a lot of the taxi companies were livid about it that they couldn't use them. But
yeah,
like, this is a little different, though, because it's Brazil, and they're not well off like countries like Canada and
despite
and
having a very growing economy.
Exactly. There's still tons really of poverty there.
Yeah. And whenever you regentrify an area from poor people or, you know, the poorer class of a city, it never really does sit well with the people because it's almost like land theft in a way, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And well, that's kind of what's going on. And it's really overshadowing the tournament thus far, which has been, through the first games, it's been a pretty good spectacle. You had Nigeria beating the crap out of Tahiti today, but it was kind of a nice story to see Tahiti score their goal.
We made fun of Luton Town. This is a team that only has one full-time soccer player on it.
Wow. Yeah.
And he's 33, and his career's coming to an end, so the future
Tahiti,
is bleak.
Tahiti Treat was my favorite drink as a child, so.
It never really stood out to me.
Not a big fan of the Tahiti Treat.
No?
No.
Oh, I loved it. It was so good and pink and not manly, but yeah. Anyways. Yeah, we're moving on from Tahiti Treat. The one thing I will say about Tahiti, though, it sucks for them. Yeah, it's nice that they get to be in this tournament, but for the teams playing them, they have to really score as many goals as possible because each team is going to say, well, if they're going to beat the crap out of them, then we have to beat the crap out of them so we have a better goal differential. So Nigeria 6-1 could just be the tip of the iceberg. What's Edinson Cavani and Luis Suarez going to do to these guys?
Nigeria's in first place right now because of the goal differential, which is really unfortunate.
Until they play Spain.
It's going to get pretty ugly from here on out. That was their best chance at a point. Anything was against Nigeria, and they literally look like a men's league team out there. Like a team 590 put together, threw out there in the Confederations Cup. It was comical. I think maybe one goal out of the six for Nigeria was half decent. All the others were just dreadful mistakes.
I get that, you know, to keep the name Confederations Cup legit, you need to have teams like this. But teams like this are exactly why sometimes these tournaments are kind of not looked upon as...
It's like Canada when they're playing Latvia in hockey, world hockey, and they just beat the snot out of them 14-1 or so. It's like that.
Well, it's like when Saudi Arabia, they make every single World Cup, and every single time they are in the World Cup, they get their clocks clean. So it's pretty much the same thing. It doesn't
make for good.
I don't know how New Zealand didn't beat Tahiti anyway.
It doesn't really make for great viewing to, you know, see how many goals Tahiti, you know, it could be a drinking game almost during the game. You know, every time somebody scores against
with
Tahiti,
Spain,
take a shot.
With Spain, I've been opining, you know, Tahiti might not touch the ball as many times as Spain scores.
What are the percentages of possession going to be in that game? How many?
90%.
We usually joke about how Spain, you know, doubles every team in passing. This could be an absolute...
Oh, man. Tiki-taka to the max. But, yeah, let's move on to Spain and Italy. Both good performances, again, from two of the teams that have showcased international tournaments in recent memory. Italy and Spain both making the Euro 2012 final. Now they're both in the Euro under 21 final. They're both in this Confederations Cup tournament. Andrea Pirlo scores a fantastic free kick, his 100th cap for Italy. They have never lost when Andrea Pirlo scores for the Azzurri.
I gotta say, I'm shocked that it's only 100 caps.
Yeah, he seems like he's been around forever, right? Father Time.
Well, and it's not like he hasn't been a great player for quite a while.
Yeah.
To think that
he's been world class.
Just 100 caps. I think Ronaldo's close to 100 caps for Portugal already. Yeah. So.
Well, he started at 17, right?
Well, but still, Pirlo's been a pretty decent player for a long time. 100 caps just seems kind of, I don't know. Considering that like a guy like Iker Casillas, who's been around forever as well, is like at 140 or something already. Just, anyway.
Okay, but a beautiful goal from him, and the next day, Luis Suarez scores against Spain, so it was like just two absolute Gary Neville moments, and I mean...
Sorry, listeners, that was...
Yeah, Gary Neville orgasms all over the place, but which goal was better? I mean, they're both incredible free kicks, but... On the Gary Neville orgasm meter, who gets closer to 10?
I give Suarez the edge here. I give him an 8 on the orgasm meter there. just based on angle and pace alone, he was a little further to the left of the goal. And
had to swerve it a little
bit
more.
Yeah, he had to put a little more curve on that. But with Pirlo's goal, it was nice. It was a little further out, but I felt like the goalkeeper could have done a lot more. It looked like he put his arm down when he could have just reached out a little further and maybe tipped it. But
yeah,
both great
goals.
He
started bracing himself for the fall before.
Yeah, exactly. Both great goals, but I give the edge to Suarez.
I'm going to have to go with Suarez just because you hate it more when he scores.
Yeah. So Suarez wins the Gary Neville orgasm.
The Gary Neville off.
Yeah, Gary Neville. Not the Russian, Gary Neville. But Spain pretty much dominated that match, by all accounts. And Italy, well, Mario Balotelli scores a late goal, and I think it was the 79th minute. Why? How do you think City feel right now, just watching the way Mario Balotelli's played for Milan and now playing for the Azzurri? He's really been incredible. At least his goal scoring record is fantastic.
Especially now that they don't have Mancini, and it seemed like that was a lot of the cause for his immaturity and his blow ups. Now that he's gone, Balotelli's playing excellent abroad, and just we were talking about it before, Dan. Just the way he plays for Italy, he has something to prove every time he's out there, and just looks so determined when he's on the ball.
Remember that girlfriend you had that, you know, you just could not wait to break up with. And then you were alone for a couple of months afterwards, and you started looking back at, you know, you just happened to see her somewhere, and you started thinking of all the fun times you had with her. And then, you know, you might end up on a date with her again, and then it takes, 10 minutes to realize why you hated her to begin with?
Yeah.
As much as, you know, Mario Balotelli looks like he's, you know, playing well, it has only been 6 months.
Yeah.
Let's give it another, 3 months, I would say.
Until he gets bored again.
Until he decides that he wants to buy firecrackers or something.
Well, I think, as Gord alluded to...
Or smoke in some, restroom somewhere. Yeah. I don't know.
He really seems like, when he's playing for Italy and the national squad, he really seems like he has something to prove. And he really... It is because he's black. That's the sad part about it.
The abuse he's taken, it's, I want to show you fans that I'm one of you and you've all been wrong about me.
Yeah. And it really feels that way. And the monkey chants don't stop and all that stuff. But he's Italian just as much as the next guy. And he feels like proving himself to the world on the world stage in these tournaments with the Azzurri is the way to prove to those Italian fans that are coming out and making those monkey chants at him, this is the way that he can prove them wrong, and this is the way that he can win them over.
Yeah, I definitely think he's a product of what Syria and the fans have done to him throughout it started really
early. Not just through his Serie A career, through his whole life.
No, yeah, but I mean, it obviously started at a young, right when he was with Inter.
Yeah,
you know, that's and then they sold him, and you know, he thought he might have gotten maybe a little bit of a reprieve in England, when he probably did while playing in the Premier League, but obviously when he went on, before he had the success at the last Euro, he really got it harshly from the home fans.
Yeah,
and it's unfortunate that that's the case with the Italian team these days.
Yeah, and you know, it's an ongoing thing with Mario Balotelli. He's one of the most polarizing figures in all of world footy. But as I said, and I think we're all in agreement here, he looks like he has something out to prove. And it just shows with that goal. He was so determined to get to that ball over all the other Mexican defenders.
Yeah.
And he did it. And he willed his way to that goal.
Eyes glued on the ball, just muscling off the tiny little defender compared to him, and then just fighting for the chance and poking it in. It is
nice to
impressive.
See him channeling, I guess, that rage and anger in the right way for the Azzurri.
Yeah, that's
hopefully,
for sure.
Hopefully it continues. Hopefully there isn't, you know, he doesn't, you know, make the wrong decision, I guess.
Yeah, very true. Confederations Cup. Group A is led by Brazil on goal differential. They have 3 points. Italy's got 3 points. Nigeria lead Group B on goal differential. They've got 6 goals compared to Spain's 2, and their +1 goal differential. So it's... I think Brazil and Italy are going to come out of Group A, and it's going to be down to Nigeria and Uruguay who gets out of Group B aside from Spain. Do you guys agree with that? Who would you give the upper hand to, Nigeria or Uruguay? Because maybe on paper Uruguay looks like the better team, but they haven't been playing all that well.
Well, they just faced the world champions, the European champions. I think it's all up here.
Well, World Cup
from
qualifying,
here.
They're really struggling in World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, but you have to imagine they're going to beat the hell out of Tahiti when they play them next.
Yeah.
And Nigeria, I think they're going to take that match as well. Yeah.
And over under for Cavani goals in that game.
Six.
It's seriously, 5.5. It's got
to
be.
Oh, it'd be nice to see that partnership finally really click. But yeah. If it's against Tahiti, does that really mean anything?
No, it doesn't really. So that group, I think second spot's going to come down to goal differential between Nigeria and Uruguay. We'll have to see how it plays up. You can, of course, watch the Confederations Cup on Sportsnet throughout the tournament. It will go on until June the 30th. European Football Weekly, follow us on Twitter at EFWSN590. I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, and Gord Brunt are alongside me. Over to another international tournament that's going on, filling up our footy void while the club season is in hiatus, and that is the UEFA European Championships for the under-21s. Italy and Spain in the final, a sort of rematch of the Euro 2012 senior style. Both teams, I think, deserve to be there. Italy, well, they were given a run by the Netherlands, but it just seemed like Italy were the better team. And they've been incredible on defense, only giving up one goal in the tournament, and it was on a penalty kick. But Spain clearly have been the class of the tournament, and they've been led by Isco, who is, even if Spain don't win in the final, I think Isco is the player of the tournament.
He's already been kind of named the best young player in the world already. Yeah. He's the experience he has probably over the rest of the guys, and these are highly touted guys, you know, Montoya, Barta, really good players.
And that's the thing with Spain, why they're doing so well in this tournament, and Italy and Holland, is that all of their players that they're starting 11, mainly, they all play for teams in their league.
Yep.
Right? And Spain, I think 9 out of the 11 starters on that team are regular players in La Liga. They don't, you know, come on in the 70th minute. They aren't reserves that travel with the team. Well, they play.
Yeah,
they play.
Isco is probably the best player on Malaga. Went to the...
He's a top 10 player in La Liga.
Quarterfinals, and he's only 20.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Obviously, this is a tournament where if he played at his, even at his just form that he's been at recently, he should be dominating, and he's been doing that.
The jokes have always been made how Brazil can easily have two squads that could qualify for the World Cup. I think Spain could have three squads. You'd have the under 21, the regular squad that they always have, and then the over 21 leftovers who didn't make the
Spain B.
Yeah, exactly. They couldn't make the men's national team.
Fernando Llorente and friends.
How would the under 21 Spain team perform against Tahiti?
Oh, man, it would be ugly. It would still be ugly. They'd probably beat them more than Nigeria beat them.
Yeah, I think the under 21 Spaniards would beat Nigeria, so yeah, it would be messy.
But yeah, and it really speaks to, like, you know, England, okay? Let's bring them up again and how poor their tournament was. They brought Jack Rodwell, for example, to play Brazil in Brazil for a friendly. Mm-hmm. He played 7 minutes in that match. Isco could probably be a bench player on this Confederations Cup team for Spain, but they said no. You can go. You're going to play 5 games at the Euro Under 21 Championships. That's better for you and your development and Spain's future in the national squad. Not playing as a reserve.
It just seems like a luxury that Spain has, though, is the patience with their young players, because their top team is one of the best in the world. So with England, it just seems like a rush to get these youngsters up. And they think it's good for them to get this experience. But when you're only getting 7 minutes, like you said, for Rodwell, it's not experience at all. It's just experience of being in a big stadium and watching the game, basically, for 83 minutes.
The rush to promote and push young English players seems to be sometimes a little foolhardy.
Walcott, 2006.
Yeah, what England needs to do is the same thing Spain did after years and years and years of Spain always being, you know, underachieving after they cruising through qualifying is nothing new for Spain. These last three tournaments where they've won is new, because for years and years and years, through tournaments and tournaments, everyone always said Spain's a dark horse, but until they prove it, you know, we can't really look at it because they always...
They choke.
And it's always been like that. And they went under a revolution where, or I shouldn't say, they revamped their entire soccer, you know, system.
Much like Germany has in recent years.
And, you know, now I think the number of coaches to players is, it's a really crazy number. It's like, I could be way off, but like 10 to 1, I think 10 players for every coach. And in England, you look at that number and it's, you know, almost tenfold. It's like, you know, one coach for every 100 players. And my numbers may not be absolutely correct there, but the point is that there's way more coaches available for the Spanish players to teach them the technical side of the game. And there isn't that in England. And that's what has to be done. It's obviously working for Spain.
Yeah, it's definitely working for Spain and it works for Italy. A lot of their players as well could have been named to their Confederations Cup squad, but they realize it's probably better to bring them to this tournament, have them play 90 minutes, be the stars of this team, rather than just sitting on the bench and watching the regulars play and while they just sit on the bench and eat up minutes. And it's a great debate to have, and it's one that will rage on for quite a long while, and it'll always be a debate to have, that is for sure. Who do you pick in this match? I mean, Spain is probably the favorite. They were the favorite going into the tournament. Italy's look good. They've, like I said, they've only given up one goal, and it was on a penalty kick. But they've also not been able to score all that many goals aside from the Israel game.
I got to take Spain. Just seems to have the number, or have created the formula now to beat Italy.
Italy doesn't match up well with Spain.
Nah.
Yeah, and they proved that in the 4-1 victory in the Euro 2012 final.
Yeah, setting yourself up to defend against Spain,
it doesn't work. They tiki-taka.
It's foolhardy, especially if you don't have the speed to counterattack to give the backline the problem, which is usually Spain's, you know, I guess Achilles heel, considering that they have all that firepower up front. It's not really an Achilles heel most of the time. It's just the only weakness that you can look at that team comparable.
Yeah, and Italy they have a lot of attacking options in this under 21 squad. That isn't a problem. They just haven't been scoring a lot of goals. But the defenses look good. But I like I said, and you agreed with me, Derek, sitting back on this Spain team, they'll hold possession and eventually, over the course of a game, they've shown it throughout this tournament and through past tournaments, eventually, if you sit back on them, they will find a way through, no matter what. It's been happening consistently since 2008. It's not going to stop now.
And it's just amazing how it translates to the under-21s as well. It's like watching a carbon copy of the men's
senior
team.
Squad, yeah.
And I just got to say, before I pick my winner here, I just, as a dejected international soccer fan, I hate you around this time of year, Dan, because you have two squads to watch, Italy under-21s and the senior squad in the Confederations Cup. Well done. Hope you're proud of yourself.
Applauso. You know, that's what made my trip to Montreal this weekend so much more hurtful. You know, missing the semifinal for the under-21.
I was stuck there watching your country. I was stuck in the studio watching your country.
Yeah.
That was just, couldn't believe it.
Was it an open bar?
No. It was a backyard party.
Okay.
Like I said, metalheads.
Now I feel a little bit bad for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm picking
Spain. And
pizzagetti
everywhere.
I was going to say,
Spain.
If it was an open bar, screw you, pal.
So Gord and Derek picking Spain. I cannot go against my beloved Azzurri. I hope they win their sixth under-21 European championship. That's more than any other squad since they made the move to this style of tournament for the under-21s. So yeah, they've got five. Hope they make it six. But it's going to be a great match either way. So you should be watching it. That is for sure. European Football Weekly. Moving on now. Another big story. I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt, in case you forgot, around the table. Joe Kinnear, longtime manager around Europe and England and other places, Nepal, stuff like that. He was last managing Newcastle in 2009. The Toon have now brought him back as director of football here in 2013. So he will handle transfers along with other things while Alan Pardew sticks to just managing the team and figuring out tactics and who his starting 11 is and all that kind of stuff.
Which is probably the best way to go forward.
He was bringing in too many French players. I think the Newcastle owner was quoted by saying that.
Was that what his problem was?
No, I don't think. I'm totally being not serious.
That Caballé is just horrible. Yeah. But Joe Kinnear, what is this? His fourth, third, I think?
Yeah.
Back to St. James Park or the Sports Direct Arena, whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah, whatever it's called.
St. James.
Same exactly.
Just stick with that.
But Joe Kinnear, the famous, X-rated rant towards a reporter, is back, and it could be absolutely brilliant. But unfortunately, he probably won't be interviewed as much as we'd probably like for our sakes here, just for sheer entertainment.
Well, we wouldn't be able to play it because it'll just be littered with curse words. All you would hear is beeps. It'd be like a bad episode of Jerry Springer.
Well, we posted it on Twitter.
Yeah, we did. So you can listen to it there.
Did you put the
EFWSN590?
Not safe for work on there as well?
I know. I just
I hope one of our listeners wasn't at work. Like, I'll just open this up. volume blaring.
As soon as you open up.
Some Englishman just swearing, just ranting at the media.
Don't worry. As soon as you open up the YouTube page, it says X-rated rant. So you've got warning.
Yeah. He's got a ton of baggage. I don't know. I more so just wanted to bring this up because the director of football kind of position isn't really a popular one in England. We look at Sir Alex Ferguson. He went through his whole Man United career doing both, brought in the transfers, did everything himself. It's in other countries, it works. In Italy, it's like you don't have a manager who does both things. It just doesn't happen.
Sir Alex is that exception to the rule that's kind of ruined it for the rest of England, because now they all, if Sir Alex, but you're not Sir Alex Ferguson, right? You know, he's the exception to that rule. Most, you know, managers should follow the rest of the European example and have somebody who takes care of transfers, because that's something I think that's much more in line with the philosophy of a club.
Yeah.
And, you know, a new manager doesn't really always follow that philosophy. A director of football is someone who can, you know, maintain that stance like they do at, you know, Barcelona or Juve or Bayern Munich.
It's kind of like the way Manchester City is going about it right now. They took the two guys from Barcelona. You know, they've brought it in. They've brought in their Barcelona mentality, I guess, and they're going to bring that up from the youth squad. Manuel Pellegrini's going to handle the senior team, and he's going to do what he needs to do with that team, figure out the tactics. Obviously, the manager has a say in transfers coming in and going out. That's not the issue, but it's not his main focus. His main focus is the day in, day out, working with the squad, training, stuff like that.
Yeah, he should have an input on the players that's coming in, because, you know, if a manager feels like he can't work with someone, you shouldn't bring that player in.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it should be the director, you know, the director of football who decides who comes in, because he's got enough time now to, you know,
he has a look at the big picture and sees all the things that are going on, things that you don't want your manager for the squad to be keeping an eye on. You want him just focusing on that one thing.
Exactly. You want your manager to have a lot of the say and a lot of input into the senior team transfers. But when it comes to the youth squad, you can't keep track of all that. There's way too much. There's tons and tons of tryouts that go on, and you have to rely on your scouts for that. And that's when it does have to be left to the director. So I think in cases where it's the senior squad, the manager definitely needs to have a say. And that's the genius of Alex Ferguson, because he did have a lot of say in a lot of the youth squad that was brought into Manchester United.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think nowadays if you're going to have a Sir Alex Ferguson type where you have both, you know, where he wears both hats, it has to be something that's earned.
Yeah.
I don't think you can just, you know, walk into somewhere and say, I want to do both.
Unless you're Jose Mourinho.
But that's, wow. You know, there's probably a handful of guys that you could say have, like, completely earned that that portfolio. You know, Mourinho, Wenger, you know, even though he hasn't won anything recently, but he's still proven that he knows how to build a squad and an identity for a club.
Very, very true. And it's we'll have to see if it works out for Newcastle, but we're looking forward to Joe Kinnear's meetings with the media, I guess you could say, because that one rant is just, beyond comprehension. It's fantastic.
Or the first, kind of I guess, friction between Pardew and Kinnear.
Yeah, that too. I mean, Pardew, apparently he said he's all for it, and they're getting ready to meet together, and they're going to discuss what the team needs are and things like that. But it is a very, very interesting time in the tune. European Football Weekly, I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt around the table. We are now very pleased to be joined by Neil Thurman of RotoWorld.com to discuss various things going on in the offseason and the new page on RotoWorld's site, which you can look to help manage your fantasy footy team throughout the 2013-14 Barclays Premier League season. Thanks for doing this, Neil. Very exciting times for footy fans. We're so used to seeing RotoWorld as a leader in fantasy sports, but mainly the other sports, the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, whatever you might think, but not soccer. So what brought about this new BPL page for RotoWorld?
Sure. Well, NBC Sports here in the U.S. has taken on the rights to broadcast the Premier League and are really making a significant push to support that beyond just the television, and are really stepping up their internet presence. And as part of the NBC Sports family, Roto World is part of that, and we're really looking to have what you would expect, the type of presence you would expect from a brand like NBC Sports and Roto World to cover the Premier League.
That sounds great, and I've been a longtime fan of the Roto World site. It always helps me with my NFL and baseball teams. So this is great news for fantasy Barclays Premier League players. I saw you did a feature on Arsenal's summer priorities. A lot of the chat has been about the Gunners having this large transfer kitty this summer to splurge on big transfers. I guess I got a two-part question for you. Firstly, do you believe in this transfer money? And secondly, is Arsene Wenger the right man to handle it?
I do believe in the money, and probably more than you need to know, but I'm an MBA and kind of a geek on the business side of the business of soccer of soccer reporting, and following them for the last 8 or 10 years as the projects have gone on to kind of sunset Highbury and put all the money into Ashburton Grove and the new site, they should be coming into a bunch of money, and that's what all of this was for. And so I believe the money is there. You can certainly question whether they want to spend it there or just put it in their own pockets. But yeah. They should have enough money to do both at this point, is my sense.
Yeah.
And now the second question, I think, is the really interesting one, which is he the guy to spend it? And I saw somewhere that 13 million, or somewhere thereabouts, at least British pounds, is still their record transfer.
Wow.
And, I forget the other teams. I think Aston Villa and a couple of others have higher largest, record transfers than Arsenal. And, it makes you wonder, is he too in love with the notion of buying cheap and showing how smart he is? Or is he willing to take the step up and take the added pressure of, hey, this one's got to be right. I don't have the excuse of, well, I had to buy them on the cheap, and so only some of those are going to work out. So it's definitely a question mark as to whether or not he can step up to that pressure. Certainly the odds makers are telling you that the Higuain deal is pretty well headed towards Arsenal. So
yeah,
That'll be the big test, and we should find out as soon as Ancelotti is named at Real Madrid, assuming that indeed comes to fruition.
We're joined by Neil Thurman from RotoWorld.com here in European Football Weekly, and that's some of the questions we've had before here on the show, is whether Arsene Wenger is the right guy for the job to spend the big transfer budget that they seemingly have this summer, and what are some of the priorities besides the rumors for strikers like Gonzalo Higuain and Stefan Jovetic? Are there other glaring priorities that the Gunners should be looking for this summer?
The big questions really come around, well, what else is going to happen? There's certainly a lot of talk of Laurent Koscielny headed to Barcelona or to Bayern. If that happens, then they need one, maybe two center backs. You have to wonder when they're ever going to buy a holding midfielder.
Yeah.
that can do something a little bit different. I mean, I the position has changed so much from the Roy Keane, Patrick Vieira era, and mm-hmm. then the kind of the Claude Makélélé era, and now there's kind of this notion of, you know, do you play more of a double pivot? Do you, you know, what do you do with that spot? There isn't kind of the notion of a midfield destroyer as the right answer anymore, but you know, you need somebody, it seems, to supplement Wilshere being aggressive but small,
right,
and Arteta being smart but not very physically gifted anymore at this point. So you'd like to see somebody who has either a box-to-box game that can kind of play off of Wilshere, or somebody who is more of the, you know, kind of Michael Carrick mold of kind of a distributor that's maybe a little bit more physical over and above what somebody like Carrick does.
Switching gears now to the other North London team, the Tottenham Hotspurs. Gareth Bale continues to make the news in regards to his future. The latest, a report out of the Daily Mirror saying an £85 million bid has been made by PSG as they hope to lure away Bale and Andre Villas-Boas to France. Tottenham, really, they can't allow this to happen, can they?
I wouldn't think so. You know, unlike Manchester United letting Cristiano Ronaldo go, you knew Manchester United could recruit to replace. It might not be exactly the same, but they could go get some very, very good players and people would want to come to them. Without a Champions League berth and without all of the romance and that goes around being a Manchester United player, it's hard to imagine somebody, you know, Tottenham really trading up or even getting close to filling that hole.
Yeah.
The only hope they would have would be to do more or less what Arsenal did with Van Persie leaving, which is, well, we'll buy a few guys and hope that, you know, we get more of a team effort and it isn't always Bale to the rescue, as it seemed to be throughout the second half of last season. But they need to do that already.
Yeah.
To shore up and get a couple of extra role players to help them with the scoring load and get an out and out forward who actually scores, as opposed to worrying about having to fill in the gap for their best player leaving.
We're joined by Neil Thurman from rotoworld.com here on European Football Weekly. Neil, keeping AVB is huge for Tottenham. We already know that he declined an offer from PSG, which is really good news for Gareth Bale, who happens to be enjoying his time under AVB immensely. Last year, according to Yahoo, Bale was the top fantasy player by about over 40 points over Robin Van Persie. If Bale does end up in a transfer to Real Madrid or another team outside of the Premier League, in your opinion, who becomes the top player in fantasy footy?
That's a great question. We've had kind of succession of best players, at least in the Yahoo format, from Beckham down to Henri down to Ronaldo. Rooney kind of filled the gap until Van Persie was healthy. And now Bale has become that guy. And, you know, somebody eventually emerges, but every once in a while you have a season where there's just a couple of guys that are good, but nobody who's transcendent. And I wonder, you know, Suarez had his moments,
yeah,
but, you know, you can't count on a guy who's suspended for 8 games at a stretch.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may just be that we're waiting, but with the amount of money that Chelsea and Manchester City and potentially United and then Spurs and Arsenal all seem to have money to bring somebody in. And you even every once in a while get that random, you know, person outside the big team, Kjelfi Sigurdsson, the second half of...
Yeah, and Michu the first half.
Yeah, the second half of the season before, not this past season, but the one before was just spectacular with Swansea and Michu, for the first half of this season at least, was great. And so every once in a while you just get one of those outliers. And so I would imagine there something will percolate, but it could be that we just have one of those years where you have to diversify and have to switch up your lineup a lot to play the matchups more than stick with one or two players.
Neil Thurman of rotoworld.com joining us here on European Football Weekly to talk transfers, fantasy football, and just a whole bunch of stuff going on as we go through the offseason in the Barclays Premier League. Manchester City, Real Madrid, both put in offers for Isco of Malaga today. he was a big part of new City coach Manuel Pellegrini's time at Malaga. So it looks like he would want to continue that success and move with Pellegrini to Manchester City. Is Isco a big upgrade for the Sky Blues in the attacking midfield?
It's a good question. You have to look at, you know, will he complement Silva? Will he be too much of the same thing? Can you get away with in the Premier League? Can you get away with two small guys like David Silva and Isco?
Yeah.
Or will they just get brutalized, you know, on that proverbial rainy Wednesday in Stoke? and can you really do that? It looks great. I watched Spain and Uruguay last night, and it was just beautiful to watch all those little guys darting around.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, Uruguay started to fight back and just pound on them, and it didn't work because the referees called it all. But in the Premier League, you wonder if that same thing will happen. We've certainly seen clubs be effective with one player like that.
Yeah.
But we have yet to really see somebody say, oh, we're going to do this with two guys and not really have any physical presence at all. So that'll be the interesting test. He's certainly talented, so he's an upgrade in that sense. And Samir Nasri certainly didn't have a great season, so they could use another attacking midfielder who can kind of play wide or come inside a little bit. But as to whether or not that really can work with his physical stature is a good question.
A bit more.
I'd enjoy seeing it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, what he's done in the under 21 tournament that's going on right now, the Euro under 21s, Isco, yep. He's been the player of the tournament. Just a joy to watch. He's fantastic. A bit more on Pellegrini, though. He's going to bring a 4-3-3 to the Etihad. We know that already from his track record. Jesus Navas, Fernandinho, they've already had some transfers coming in. Are we going to expect a few more goals from City under Pellegrini?
I think the big key is what they have in Aguero. He had a spectacular first season, second season up and down. And,
yeah.
You know, is he really the guy from the first season? Is he really the guy from the second season? Is he somewhere in between? In my mind, he's the thing that makes everybody go because nobody seems to have confidence in Dzeko if he's even still around come August. And Tevez, another one you can't really count on because who knows when he's going to be off playing golf.
Yeah, that's true too. But Tevez, he could very well make the move to Italy as it seems right now.
And then the question becomes, who do you bring in as replacements? Do you go to more of a, you know, Aguero's not really a center forward in the 4-3-3 sense. He's not going to hold up play. He's not going to get the ball in the air. So does he move out wide? Do they play kind of more of a messy, like, quote, false nine or whatever you want to call that?
Yeah.
The system that Barcelona runs with Messi at the front of it, and is he put in that role? And it would just be a different role for him, so not having that partner to play off of. So certainly Pellegrini's been successful in making his system work, and the players are talented. It's just a question of whether they can mesh in the formation.
Neil, I want to thank you for doing this. He's from rotoworld.com. He's going to help us all year long with our fantasy footy teams and giving us all the news in the Barclays Premier League. Before you go, what else can we expect from RotoWorld's coverage to come in the summer and throughout next season?
Coming up throughout the rest of the summer, we'll certainly dive into more serious analysis of transfers as they start hitting, and then team previews. You know, what to expect from individual teams, and then new players coming into the league. As you've suggested, we've started to have some interesting transfers, and we'll have plenty more. And then all the advice that you'd want as a fantasy manager, both on player news, which you've come to expect from Roto World, as well as features, kind of helping you week to week pick your teams, understand what's happening in the league, and hopefully just being a great resource to fantasy managers.
I hope I speak for everyone in saying I'm really looking forward to this. Neil, I want to thank you again. Where can we find you on Twitter?
Neil, N-E-A-L-J, Thurman, T-H-U-R-M-A-N.
I want to thank Neil Thurman again for coming on. We're hoping he's going to be around throughout the season to help us with our fantasy footy teams and hopefully your fantasy football teams. We might even even get a little league going here with the European, with us guys and you listeners. So it should be fun. Stay tuned for that at EFWSN 590. We'll look into it a little bit more. It'll probably be a Yahoo league, something of that ilk. And
I've never played fantasy soccer before. So
really?
I'm actually looking forward to it. We have to do this. We have to get a league going.
I popped my cherry this year with fantasy footy.
Ooh, and congratulations.
It was actually turned out to be a good season. I finished fifth in the fan league.
If you call that good.
Guys like Jeff Blair, Ryan Fabro,
Igor.
Igor actually won it. I didn't want to mention that, but Igor Henriquez, the astute producer. He's got nothing better to do with his life, so he just figured out who to start every week. I didn't really pay attention for the first half of the season, but that will not be the case for the EFW League. Stay tuned for that. And as I said, Neil Thurman will probably join us throughout the season. At Neil J. Thurman is where you can find him on Twitter, and rotoworld.com. They have a BPL page, like immediate player news, and they'll have features throughout the season helping you with your fantasy football and transfers going in and out and all that good stuff. So it'll be a great source of information for everybody in the Barclays Premier League. Gord, there's some big news out of Scotland this week.
Yes, one of the biggest clubs in the SPL, Hearts, have, well, they're within days of going into administration.
I thought team, Italy was bad.
Yeah, another team in the SPL that is facing horrible financial woes. They're due to be deducted 15 points going into next season. And
oh, man.
The team that was relegated this past season is actually pretty pissed off right now that this is all happening now when it should have happened before the season ended, which would have relegated Hearts and not Dundee, because Hearts finished 14 points above them.
Oh, man.
Believe that. So they're calling tomfoolery on this. This is crap. They're losing their mind. But Hearts owe £25 million, and they're actually going to be in the Scottish First Division, which is kind of good that they're doing it. Well, if they don't make it next season, so if they get relegated next season, they'd go down to the Scottish First Division, and they'd likely have to spend another season there, because then you probably have Rangers advancing to the Scottish First Division. That would be the most exciting season in that division's history. But this is not looking good for the SPL as a whole. You're losing another massive derby match, the Edinburgh Derby between my team Hibs and Hearts, and now you don't have the Old Firm match of Celtic and Rangers. So it's going to be tough for them to sell their TV rights when the big matchup isn't there
anymore. Yeah, you lose two of your most recognizable clubs to the...
The Hibs fan in me is loving this, but the overall SPL fan is like, this can't be good for the league as a whole.
You know, maybe we should get James Young on to talk about this, because he emailed us after he was on the show last week, because Gord was talking about his Hibs affiliation on last week's show, and he emailed me right after listening to the podcast, and he said, you know, if I had known there was a Hibs fan as part of the crew, I wouldn't have come on the show. So we'll have to get James on.
Ouch.
So you can chirp him a little bit more.
Just one more thing. When I was over in Scotland, there were discussions, and this is just at the pub, and everyone was discussing how they should just merge the two teams in Edinburgh. Edinburgh isn't as big as Glasgow. Glasgow's got 1.5 million.
That could never
Edinburgh's
happen.
At half. Exactly. That would just, there would be hate throughout the stands. Fans fighting each other. It would be.
That's a terrible idea.
In a perfect world for me, without affecting the league, just dissolve Hearts and just make Hibs the number one team in Edinburgh.
Gord is the least biased guy on this panel.
That's one of the beautiful things about footy, though, is that, you know, in almost every league, you have big, massive teams in every city. So it's not just, you know, you have one team, you know, owning an entire, you know, city like they do here, like the Leafs do here, you know. Wouldn't it be great if we had, you know, like three hockey teams to, you know, not all cheer for at the same time, but, you know, West End against the East End. You know, that's the beautiful thing about football.
Well, derby matches all over Europe. We can't even comprehend what they mean to the people that live in those cities. It's more than just a game. I mean, the Siena and Fiorentina matches, the Derby of Tuscany in Italy, that goes back to, like, wars, you know, in the 1500s and 1600s that happened in those cities before Italy was even a country. So it is just like, it's way more than I can even comprehend growing up here in Canada.
Huge derby matches are, if you could sweep you know, the two games in the season, that's almost as important as winning a title for a lot of places. Like if Lazio can beat Roma both derby matches,
well, beating them in the Coppa Italia was huge. They staged a funeral. For
I wonder
Roma.
If that was a planned event.
It was a planned event. No, seriously. after they beat Roma in the Coppa Italia final, they staged a funeral for Roma in Lazio. And they had like some guy dress up as Francesco Totti's wife, Ilari. And
why'd they choose a guy to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. It looked like a guy. It didn't look like a girl. Yeah, it looked like a guy. But anyways, Genoa did the same thing with Sampdoria when Sampdoria got relegated from Serie A. So these, like, they had funerals. These derbies.
It sounds
mean,
a little worse than the Tevez rest in peace, Sir Alex.
Yeah, it's a little worse. It's than a little that. Bit more morbid. Well, than you would like.
We
but
only
still.
Need to. We only need to look at Gord whenever Arsenal is able to beat Tottenham and just see how glowing he is for like the next week.
Yeah, even that meaningless game for Scotland beating Croatia. You guys should have. I was smiling ear to ear.
But the derby matches, they just mean so much to these.
And they're
these
essential
cities.
To what footy is.
Exactly. And that's why, it's part of the reason why, you know, winning a league isn't as much a priority as you would think. I mean, obviously each team has goals and not every team is going to win the league. You know, mid-table teams, they don't aspire to win the league every year. But as you said, Derek, if they can win their derby matches, that's more than enough for them. And they'll be very happy with that. At least the fans will.
Yeah, yeah.
And that'll wrap up the show for this week. We'll thank Neil Thurman once again. We'll be back next week with more talk about the Confederations Cup on Sportsnet. And we'll do lots of various things on the transfer news and whatnot. Stay tuned with @EFWSN590 on Twitter. We'll have transfer news. We'll have any kind of news that's popping up in the world of footy. So stay tuned to that. And, of course, you can find the show on iTunes and Sportsnet590.ca whenever you please. Until next week, I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt. We'll talk to you.